welcome to another edition of the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here with you, along with our producer, Zach Factor. How are you, young man?
Doing good.
Yeah, looking good.
Doing good.
And joining us in studio for the entire show this week, my partner Chris Arps is not here. He is taking care of some family business this weekend and will be back with us next week. But taking Chris's spot just for the day is our good friend Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher. The St. John the Philosopher show on YouTube is one of my favorite watches on YouTube. I highly recommend everyone go check it out. And Gabe will be in here for the entire show with us. So welcome, my friend. Great to see you.
Hey, guys. Great to be here. This is awesome.
Let me move this microphone so I can see you. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. My freshman effort in the hot seat here.
Yeah.
So this is pretty cool.
Yeah, but you've been on this show many times. You've been on Dave Glover's show many times. You've been on Annie's show many times. So anybody who, for the 97.1 listener who maybe isn't familiar with you, before we get started with today's show, tell them about you and tell them about the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show, which has my endorsement, as much of an endorsement as I can give, I give to that show.
All right. Well, I guess I could kind of sum it up with how I list my info on the YouTube channel. I say I'm a black conservative Christian rocket scientist talking about religion, culture, and politics. So what could go wrong?
Yes. No. Gabe's background is absolutely fascinating because, like you just said, rocket scientist, and that's not hyperbole.
Right.
That's real. You're a graduate from MIT.
Yep. I have an aerospace engineering degree from MIT.
So literally a rocket scientist.
I have designed space missions as projects.
Also a leader at the church that I go to, and Pastor John Michael Brown, who's going to be on the show a little bit later on today.
Yep.
Another veteran of this show and many others on FM News Talk 97.1. But you are big at the church. You are a scientist, a rocket scientist. You're and a black conservative.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah, I'm hitting it all.
You got
all
it
the
all,
cylinders,
man.
Right? Yeah. Checking all the boxes.
That's what when he said, "I need to take the week off, but you have to find a black conservative."
I love it. Yeah.
Don't put anybody else in my spot.
I'm keeping the seat warm for him. Yeah, definitely.
So, just briefly talk about the show on YouTube.
Right. Yeah.
Because I think it's amazing.
Well, on the show, like I said, I talk about religion, culture, and politics from my relatively unique perspective because of my background, and I like to kind of take a little deeper look at these things and go to kind of the root at what's underneath all the things that we talk about, all the ways that we tend to go surface level, we tend to just snipe back and forth, but I really want to go to the basis of these things. How are you formulating your ideas? How are we coming to these conclusions? And why? What's the point of it all? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of usually where I go with all my shows.
Chris and I have talked about this many times. You and I have talked about this many times. What is it? How much pushback do you get from the African American community being a prominent person in the community that doesn't fall in line with the normal talking points that, the Democrats, you're black, so you're supposed to be a Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
How much do you get a lot of pushback from friends and family or people in the community, and how do you deal with that?
Now, I've been pretty lucky, relative to a lot of my black conservative friends, like Chris. My friends and my family generally kind of leave it alone. And I don't know whether that's because of the way I debate.
I was going to say, they probably know that getting into a debate with you is futile.
Or it's just general. I like to think it's just because they love me and they don't want to go there with it. But, most of the pushback has been just kind of community-wide. So if I occasionally might, and somebody overhears me speaking or I just get into a conversation at the barbershop or whatever, or online in particular.
People are vicious online.
It's a thing to behold.
Woo.
But yeah, I mean, and that stuff usually just kind of rolls off my back. I don't care so much. But yeah, I do consider myself lucky because I know a lot of people who have lost friends and who have severed family member relationships because of politics. And it's really gross.
Yeah, I said on the Dave Glover Show this week that I am so mad at the Democrats because I like to be angry at both parties. I like to
You're a libertarian.
Yeah, so I identify myself more as a libertarian than anything else. But yeah, so I like to point out that, you know, we need a third or fourth party in this country, and that, you know, the only thing worse than a Republican is a Democrat. And but the Democrats have gone so far.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly, I mean, we're going to obviously, we've got 2 hours. We're going to get into all this Kavanaugh stuff. There's so much to talk about there. Mm-hmm. But it has just been on display so prominently these last couple of weeks and months. And the Democrats have just gone so far to the left that it's impossible. They make me, who tries to be not a moderate,
right,
but just somebody who isn't not afraid to call out a mistake or by the Republicans or something that I disagree with.
Right, you're not a total partisan.
Right, in the double, yeah. If I am totally fine with calling out things that I see a Republican politician or the Republican Party doing that I don't agree with.
Right,
like freaking Sean Hannity these days because the Democrats are so far gone that there's nothing there. There's
no comparison between what the Republicans are doing that's bad versus what the Democrats are doing. That's bad. So you end up just kind of screaming.
You just scream at the Democrats.
Like,
and
what
you
are
just
you doing?
Are so angry at the level that the left has taken it to and how far left the liberals have gone. That everybody sounds like a Republican. I mean, and the reason I bring this up is because it sort of ties back into what you're talking about and what we're, and you know, the whole they're supposed to be the party of minorities and the party of women.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard more women in my life come out passionately mm-hmm. against what the Democrats are doing, and they've come out for Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes.
And, you know, but the liberals would have you believe that all women hate Brett Kavanaugh. And, okay, maybe there are a few that don't, mm-hmm. but they're just self-hating people that have turned their backs
they're
on
controlled
their
by
own
their
gender.
Conservative husbands.
Yeah,
often,
yeah.
Right?
They're controlled by their conservative husbands, bosses, and sons, according to Hillary Clinton. But and also, you know, they're supposed to be the party of minorities. They're supposed to be the party of women. And they're supposed to be the party of tolerance and equality.
Tolerance,
and there is nobody more intolerant right now than the people on the left. And I want to say the far left. But right now,
that's pretty much all
the whole
right
freaking
now.
Party is far left. Every one of them has just gone crazy.
Oh yeah, it's really nutty. And to see the people being accosted in public the way they are, you know, you can't go into a restaurant, you can't walk from your office to the elevator in Congress. Oh my gosh, it's pretty nuts.
And normally I would say, like, you know, when the Democrats were in power, when they had the Senate and the House, you know, I would say, you know, and they would bully their way through, and the Republicans would try some tricks to get, you know, and there might be some tricks that I would disagree with the Republicans, or there might be some, and you know, and I would say, you know, well, the Democrats are just, you know, they're in power, so they're using all their, you know, the things they can do, but the Republicans are trying these tricks that I don't really agree with. But I would always, you know, normally I would say something like, at this point, when a party is behaving the way that they are, the left right now, normally I would say, well, the Republicans are capable of being just as bad. I don't think that I can say that anymore.
No, not at all.
I feel like they like I don't put it past any politician to go all the way low and dirty, but I don't think the Republican Party as a whole, maybe there's a couple of dirty politicians, but I mean the whole party, like we've seen with the left, as low and as dirty as they've gone. I don't think the Republicans go that low or are capable of going that low.
Not at all. Not at all. I think actually this is a very interesting effect of the Trump presidency. Because the thing is, not being a polished politician, not having handlers for decades kind of working on his image and things like that, there was no way to cover basically the dirtiness of politics the way I think it has been in the past. I think politics has always been this dirty. Right. We just haven't seen it because everybody's so polished.
Right.
But so Trump steps into the ring and he's bare knuckled, right? So what happens is the established politicians say, "All right, then fine," and they throw their gloves off. But now we see they've been wearing brass knuckles underneath all the time.
Right.
So guess what? You know, these guys are actually the worst. So yeah. I think that's really where it is. And really, on some level, I love that about it because the politics is naked and we can see it for what it is.
So we'll delve into this in detail a little bit later on. We've only got about a minute left in this segment, and then we're going to talk to Sondra McDowell, who is the Republican candidate for Missouri State Auditor. In the next segment, going to be a great interview. I want to talk to her about Clean Missouri and several other things. Don't miss that discussion. But just your quick 60,000-foot view of what we've seen with this Brett Kavanaugh madness, the FBI investigation that we just saw week. Do you see any let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Democrats going to be successful in all of this shenanigans, or in the end, is Brett Kavanaugh going to end up on the Supreme Court?
I am tentatively optimistic that Brett Kavanaugh is gonna move on.
Gotcha.
Now it's gonna make it weird for all the law students at Harvard who protested him to try and win cases against him. You know? but I think the Democrats they've definitely motivated their base, but I think they're losing the middle.
Yeah,
and I think this is coming back to bite it because normal
people
they're
losing the common sense people that the non political people
they're seeing what's going on. They're saying this is nuts.
Yeah,
I'm voting straight ticket Republican. I've seen it a lot on social media, and I think it's gonna grow.
Well, like I said, we'll get into the details of everything happening with Brett Kavanaugh a little bit later in the show. But coming up right on the other side of the break, Sondra McDowell, the Republican candidate for Missouri State Auditor, we're gonna talk to her about Clean Missouri and some other big issues that face her and her election. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here for that interview, which is next on the Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. Hello and welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo in the studio with our producer Zach Factor, of course. And Chris Arps is not here. Just talked about that in the last segment. He is out taking care of some family stuff. But our good friend Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher, is in the studio and will be for this entire show, filling Chris's shoes and taking us through the entire Weekend Report. So, Gabe, thanks again for your help today.
Lucky you guys. Come on. These dulcet tones, right?
That's right. That's right. Joining us on the phone, as we just mentioned, our first guest this week is Sondra McDowell. She is the Republican candidate for Missouri State Auditor, and we are thrilled to have her back on the show. Sondra, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me back on. I really appreciate it. You guys are always a lot of fun. I love being on anytime you invite me.
Yeah, no, you bet. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure that right now your life is pretty hectic. When we talked to you last, it was pretty much immediately following the primary vote that you had won. I'm sure not surprising to you, but surprising to some. That you have sort of come on strong here at the end of the primary and won, and now are continuing to sort of gain momentum as we go towards the November ballot. Just talk about where you're at in this journey and what you've sort of been through in these last few months.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've got right about 30 days left here, and I am just pushing it to get out as much as I can, still meet as many people as I can, just like I was doing in the primary. I've been all around the state, I don't know how many times, and basically have the roads memorized at this point. But I really enjoy getting out and meeting people and talking about things. And, you know, things keep popping up with our current auditor, with the problems in our office. And so the more I'm out there talking to people, the more I'm going to know when I get in office in January that I can fix, because there are a lot of problems there. But I'm still pushing it. I've got a lot of fundraisers set up. I've got a lot of chili suppers and barbecues still to go nice. To. So a lot of fun.
So I just want to get this one out of the way, because the last time we talked about you, there was a couple of news stories going around, and I know this has kind of haunted you a little bit, but I think this is about to go away. It seems like this issue is dying, but there was a residency issue that was brought up about your candidacy, and some people out there were saying that that you didn't have the that you weren't legally allowed by the Missouri law to run for auditor because of a residency issue from 10 years ago or 8 years ago or something like that. We've had Missouri Supreme Court judges come out and say that is not the case, that you are, you know, okay, you know, within that law and everything. Where are you at on that? Is that pretty much a dead issue that we can just move on from now on?
It is. It's a dead issue. They had, after the votes were certified by Secretary Ashcroft, the candidates on the ballot had 5 days to sue, and no one did that. And I signed an affidavit in the beginning when I filed for office that I am qualified for this position based on my evidence that I have. I meet the 10-year requirement under the Kit Bond case that said that the intent is what that's what mattered and your residency status. And actually, on that note, I just received my endorsement from Kit Bond that I just posted on my Facebook page. So
there,
that's really wonderful. Because we did have some similar residency issues, and both of us have overcome those. Obviously, he went on to be a wonderful auditor and has done so much more for the state of Missouri and for our country. And so I thank him for that, and it's wonderful to have his endorsement. But yeah, that's a non-issue at this point. If anyone sued, they wouldn't have standing to sue. The candidates are past their time frame, and so I will be on the ballot. I'm very qualified. In fact, I would say I'm one of the most qualified candidates that's ever run for state auditor with my background, with my bio and my experience that I have. I think I can step into office and start working very hard for Missouri and do a great job in that office.
Great. Good to know, and good to know we can put that one to bed. Go ahead,
hey,
Gabe.
Hey, Sandra. Gabe Pfeiffer here. It's great to meet you. Great to talk to you. Obviously, the Clean Missouri Initiative is a big deal. We've been talking about it, and it, you know, it portends to provide a bit of extra power actually for the seat of the auditor. Now, what is your overall position on it, or you know, how are you considering it as you're making your candidacy?
Sure. And I've been telling people, you know, from the very first time I heard about Clean Missouri, how bad this is. This could be devastating for our state if redistricting was in the wrong hands. And that's what Clean Missouri does. You know, it limits lobbyist gifts and does some other things. But the purpose of Clean Missouri is to give redistricting power to the state auditor's office, because the only statewide office that is still currently held by a Democrat is the state auditor's office. And so Democrats, all the people pushing this initiative, you know, George Soros, Planned Parenthood's all funding it. Treasurer is Nimrod Chappell, who's the president of the NAACP. And so they're hoping to get more Democrats in office this way. And this is a strategy they're using because we do have so many Republicans in office. We've got Trump as our president, who's doing a wonderful job. But yeah, Clean Missouri is dirty. It's wrong for Missouri. I've been telling everyone about this. And you know, my opponent, the current auditor, she's for Clean Missouri.
Yeah.
And she says that she's against dark money, but there's actually dark money going in to the Clean Missouri Initiative. And so she's been very inconsistent with a lot of things, this being one of those. But the Clean Missouri will be on the ballot. The circuit court took it off. Appeals court has put it back on, and the Missouri Supreme Court is not going to take it. So it will be on the ballot, and we need to get that information out to everyone about how bad this could be in the wrong hands. But it does make the auditor's race this election,
yeah,
one of the most important auditor's races, I think, in the history of Missouri. So we need to really sure that we get people out to vote and that they vote for me, because I will safeguard those districts. And if that does fall in Galloway's hands, it could be very devastating to our state.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember when net neutrality was a big story. And
yes.
And the thing with net neutrality is everybody was like, okay, I know this is a big deal because everybody keeps saying it's a big deal, but I don't understand it.
Right.
I feel like Clean Missouri falls in sort of that area,
definitely.
Because it's like, okay, Sandra, we've had you on the show and we've talked about, you know, with you, I've gotten on my soapbox on this show and Dave's show and Annie's show and, you know, every show I could be on this radio station and talked about how important Clean Missouri is. But it's confusing because, like you just mentioned, Sandra, they threw a couple other things in there to make it look attractive, and then they named it Clean Missouri, which makes it almost sound like an environmental issue. But can you just explain what Clean Missouri will do to the state as far as redistricting is concerned, and why it's such a bad deal? Can you kind of explain what's going to happen if it does pass and why it's so important that it doesn't pass?
Yes, please.
Yes. So the purpose of the part of redistricting, so like I said, there's a lot of things grouped together, and that's why the circuit court had thrown it off, was because they're not related to each other, and I agree with that. I think that it should have stayed off. So there's lobbyist gift restrictions. There's limiting the amount of time a politician has to wait to become a lobbyist. There's more campaign contribution limits. And then redistricting was kind of tacked on at the end, which I have noticed that Secretary Ashcroft was able to get that to the top of the ballot language so that people can see redistricting right there when they first start reading the ballot initiative. So that may help a little bit, but the purpose of Clean Missouri is for the redistricting to go to the state auditor's office. And within just the segment of the redistricting aspect of it, the purpose of that is to make all districts as equal as possible. And so what that means to me is that their purpose is to make every district in Missouri as equal 50% Democrat as 50% Republican in order to get, I believe, more Democrats in office. And so, and the problem with that is that, you know, as Missouri, we all know, is laid out the way it is. You've got a lot of Republicans all centered in Mid-Mo, down into Southwest Missouri, Southeast Missouri. You've got, you know, a high concentration of Democrat population in the Kansas City area, the St. Louis, certain areas in St. Louis. And so in order to make the districts as equal as possible, you would have to merge some of those Democrat counties districts with some highly Republican districts. And the only way to do that would be to, you know, take one from, you know, St. Louis County, St. Louis area, and merge it with maybe someplace down in, you know, Greene County area, which means your districts are going to be spread out across the state, maybe with like a noodle or a star or some kind of a weird connection, because they still have to be contiguous. They still have to connect, but they've taken away the requirement that the districts have to be compact. So currently they have to be compact. Clean Missouri says nothing about them being compact. So this will happen if it were to pass and it's in the wrong hands, because that's their whole plan. That's their whole purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I've noticed, and tell me if you think I'm right on this, is that this is being promoted by the Democrats as a good thing. But the Democrats, the supposed party of the minorities, which we talk about a lot with Gabe, who's a black guy, and you know, and the Democrats, maybe not so much the party of the minorities, but they claim to be. But in under this Clean Missouri thing, a lot of African American power will be taken away by this redistricting, and there won't be as much representative of those minority communities. Is that how you see it if this does go through?
I definitely think that's possible, and I know people have, you know, questioned that, but I don't see how you could see it any other way. If they're going to be merging these districts so that they can get more Democrats in office, I mean, it's going to disenfranchise the African American voters because they're highly concentrated in certain areas right now, and if you merge, you know, those areas with with other areas, that they're not going to have the representation that they want or that they deserve, and that's a concern. But you've got these high level Democrats that are pushing this, and they have their people that they're going to want in office. You know, they're just like Nicole Galloway. She's their up and coming rising star. She's the one they're going to be putting up for governor if I can't get rid of her here in November. And so they have their favorites that they're going to be pushing, and it will totally disenfranchise the African American voters.
Bad deal all the way around. Mm-hmm. But now I'm going to ask you a slightly different question, a little side topic. But I understand that at earlier in your career, you worked for Chris Koster, who at the time I believe was a Democrat. And with the whole walk away movement, there have been a lot of people who have these stories of their political transformations from one to the other. Now, did you consider yourself a Democrat back then? And if so, tell us how you came to identify as a Republican.
Oh, not at all. No.
Okay.
Honestly, whenever you work for these state agencies, I mean, we had tons of Republicans in the Attorney General's office under Chris Koster, and Chris Koster used to be a Republican.
Yeah.
And I will say he ran a very well-run office. That, you know, the people he had put in place knew what they were doing. He had several prior judges that were running a lot of the office, and it was, I learned a lot of leadership and management experience that, you know, that I hadn't picked up on yet when I worked there, and it was, I really enjoyed working there. Politics didn't come into play at the AG's office. Same thing with the Secretary of State's office. I worked under Secretary Ashcroft, and politics just don't come into play in those jobs. It's just like the auditor's office. It's a job that you're doing. And so any bias that you have with being pro-life or pro-Second Amendment, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with your job duties there with, you know, litigating cases or prosecuting fraud. And so to me, you know, working under a Democrat or Republican in those type of agencies or offices really doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, higher up in the office, the executive team is going to matter more because of their agenda and the things that they're wanting to do. But lower level, like I said, there were a lot of Republicans, even though a lot of chiefs actually in the office under Koster were also Republican. So I've never identified as a Democrat. You know, early on in my life, when you're going through college
yeah.
it's kind of confusing because the colleges are so many are so liberal. And I went to so many because I was in the military. You know, I was in the Air Force for 8 years, and mm-hmm. I went to school the whole time. And I moved around about five or six different schools as I relocated with the military. And it's almost repulsive how much these schools push their liberal agenda on you. And I was pretty grounded in my faith. You know, I've been a Christian my whole life and was pretty grounded in my faith. And I just kept thinking, well, I think they're wrong, but they keep telling me that abortion is okay and all this stuff. And it kind of made me get set in my, you know, grounded in my ways even more, the more they kept telling me that I was wrong. I mean, I was a philosophy major also, and philosophy is big, liberal in a lot of ways. And honestly, when I went to Drake University, I think I was the only Republican in the entire class. And so they pitted me against the Democrats to argue the different positions. And they were trying to flip me is what they were doing. But again, I held very true to my values, and I argued the opposite side. And at the end, the teacher said, "You know, Sandra, now do you believe that illegal immigrants should have health care now that you argued that?" I said, "Oh, no, not at all. You just told me to argue that side." But that's what they're trying to do, is they're trying to flip you. And it just, you know, it didn't work with me, but it does work with some students. And that's really, it's really not good, you know, that's happening. But you've got to stay grounded in your faith, your Christian principles. You know, I've been pro-life, pro Second Amendment my whole life, and that's never changed. And regardless who you work under in these offices, that's not going to change you either. If these liberal schools couldn't change me, Chris Koster couldn't change me.
There you go.
You're a fighter.
We have been talking with Sandra McDowell. She is the Republican candidate for the Missouri State Auditor Office. And before we let you go, Sandra, I know that getting your message out and getting your name in people's heads is like the number one challenge right now that you're going through as we close in, like you said, just about a little under a month to go in this race. Tell people how they can learn more about you, maybe see you at a campaign stop or websites that they can read about your position, social media to follow you on, all that good stuff. How can people learn more about Sandra McDowell?
Sure. I have my website, SandraMcDowellForMissouri.com. I've got my Facebook, Twitter, at McDowell for Mo. I put up, you know, my pictures, posts of all the events I'm going to, the events I'm planning to go to. So follow me on there. If I haven't met you yet, I would love to meet you. If you can come to an event, I would love that. And just talking to your friends, your neighbors, your family members, getting them out to vote. We've got to get people out to vote. I don't see a blue wave happening. I really think that we're going to see a lot of remarkable Republicans stay in office and get in office this election, but we still have to do the work. We still have to get out there and phone bank, door knock, get yard signs, and promote your candidates because that's, you know, you got to do something to help. And if we don't win this, you know, we'll all regret it. I guarantee you that. So we've got to get out and do the work. And so please vote for me November 6th. I need your support. I need donations. You can donate on my website. And I just thank you all so much for allowing me this opportunity to be your nominee for state auditor. Appreciate it.
That is Mo State Auditor Sandra McDowell. Sandra, I hope we get another chance to talk with you in a couple weeks before the election happens. Keep fighting the good fight on Clean Missouri, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you. I'd love that. Thank you.
You bet. Have a great day. And that was Sandra McDowell, Republican candidate for Missouri State Auditor. That and all the interviews that you hear here on The Weekend Report are available on the podcast at 971talk.com/podcast. So if you'd like to hear that again or you miss anything on today's show, make sure you go back and check that out on the website. Got to take a quick break. Back with more. Don't go anywhere. It's The Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. All right, welcome back to The Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here. Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher, in for Chris Arp, sitting right across from me. Thanks again, Gabe, for helping us out this week.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
St. John the Philosopher YouTube show. I highly recommend you go check it out. You go to YouTube, you just type in St. John the Philosopher. You're the first thing that comes up,
right? Oh, yeah, I'm the only one.
The only one, right.
Yep.
So go and check that out. Zach Factor, producer of The Stars, is in studio as well. And now, joining us in studio, as he does every week at this time, our good friend Skip Weber.
Oh, yeah.
Good afternoon.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
I am glad to see you. If my voice sounds a little weak, I've been on a little bit of a soapbox for this show
about all the
craziness that we've been enduring this week.
I get it.
And as I said right as we went to the break, I'm so glad that we're going to lighten the mood and have a little fun.
I so much am not a political guy. I don't like to follow politics that much.
Right.
I can't look away. It's so horrible.
I know.
It's so horrible.
They're pulling you in.
It's like looking at a crash on the road.
You're so right.
Yeah.
And you hate it.
It kind of makes me mad.
It really makes me mad.
I think one side thinks I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Right.
As an average person.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that I always support the other side. But
sure. Sure.
Everybody will know who I'm talking about these sides. But I don't know.
I said it earlier. I said it on Dave's show this week, and I said it earlier on this show. I am like you. I am mad at the Democrats because they're making me like emotional. They're making me hate what's happening, but at the same time, they're making me like I can't get away from it. Like I feel like I'm consumed.
My favorite thing about being non-political is that I can be friends with everybody. I have friends who are very, very strong in both directions of that.
Yeah.
And even if we talk politics, we're friends afterwards.
Right.
That's
right.
Not that common right now.
No, unfortunately,
but
it's changing.
But so with that being said, this one thing used to be the most nonpartisan thing in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If you have a good record as a judge, if the Judicial Review Board gives you a thumbs up, your ideology doesn't matter.
Right.
You get grilled.
Sure.
You get grilled in it.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Here, Sotomayor and Kagan were grilled by Republican senators, and then they voted for her because
both of them. And both of those votes were 65 to 35.
Yeah. And so there's a few ideological things. But now to listen to people who are supposed to become high-minded and say, you know, this we need to end the partisanship. But I'm not voting because I have disturbing things about what he thinks on. That's being partisan because
right.
you're disturbing things about what
right.
he thinks.
Right.
This should not happen in judges.
Yes, historically,
right.
so, that's not how
you know,
it's supposed to go.
I have voted so people would be surprised at how divided my allegiance has been in voting.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I think I probably have leaned more conservative the last few years
mm-hmm.
just because things, you know, especially since 9/11 probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I tell you what, if something doesn't change before November, it'd be hard for me to vote for a Democrat. I'm so mad at that right now.
Right. Yep. Right.
I hear that a lot.
I go with every individual election is an open mind because I have, as a businessman, I have a lot of access to the candidates.
Right.
And
right.
I talk to them and right. I like talk to them. And I have, I usually, from the lower levels, including U.S. representatives, I'll go with what I am told in person.
Yeah.
With how
right.
I vote.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When I do that.
Right. Right.
And,
Gabe said it earlier about how they, the level that they've taken it to has turned off a lot of the people in the middle.
And I don't like to say that. And as a businessman, I'm probably shooting myself in the foot because there's Democrats. I'm not going to buy a car from them. But that's, mm-hmm. that's probably stupid for me to say that. But I would say, listen.
Nah, conservatives spend money. You're good. You're good.
I know. I'm messing with you, but I know what you mean.
I'm
business conservative.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. But every other issue, I think I would surprise a lot of people.
Going down
all the issues because that's why I don't like to be in either tent.
Right.
I'm very, very much an independent. But this issue alone, by itself,
mm-hmm.
has made me finally say the Democrats or the Republicans.
Right,
right.
I hardly ever use those. You've known me for several years.
Yeah.
You've never heard me get involved
Heck
with that kind
no.
of stuff. Ever. I don't like to.
No, yep. I know. To that point, my dad was apolitical his whole life. He always said it doesn't matter who gets in. They've all got bad things they're going
exactly
to do.
That's exactly what
but
I
he,
say.
But
yeah,
he was a business owner,
right.
yeah.
and just like you. And he said, so I vote Republicans because they're a little bit more pro-business, but they're all bad.
Yeah.
And he was the most apolitical person that you knew, but he was just like, I own a business. I feel like I have to.
That's kind of how I feel.
Anyway.
It's just a tough
so
feel.
So this is supposed to be not the,
yes,
this supposed
yes,
to be non politics.
I know, but we were talking about it. You said you were on the soapbox.
Yes,
so
I was screaming earlier.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
But now it is time for America's favorite game show, The Weekend Reports.
Oh, we need a theme
weird
song,
news challenge. I know. I'm going to have Perry working on something
there
for
us. There
you
go. Yeah.
A little weird news challenge theme song. This is Gabe's first appearance in the Weird News Challenge.
Yay.
You've heard it many times, you
oh,
said.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
you know how it
you
works.
You have heard it?
I have heard it.
Do you know what the Katie Fitzpatrick rule is?
Oh, you can't. You have to answer after the question has been read.
Yes.
What do you think of that rule?
Well,
okay.
Just be honest.
It's hurting the whole point of buzzing in.
Here we go.
You want to be?
It's a stupid rule. Is it not right?
It's
all
the
right.
rule.
It's the
rule.
All right.
So there you go.
Ready?
I'm telling you.
This week.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is going to stay. This week we will suspend the Katie Fitzpatrick
all right,
rule.
Okay.
All right.
Katie Fitzpatrick
right.
rule.
First one out. See,
the
now
Katie
now it's
Fitzpatrick
game.
Rule is not in effect for this week's edition. So
right.
you don't have to wait. That means you don't have to wait till the
soon
end of the
as
question
I, yeah,
soon
before
as you think
buzzing
of it,
in.
Then
yeah.
But so, as soon as you buzz in, you stop reading.
I stop reading.
Right.
You're locked
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're locked
in. And if you don't get it, then the other people can hear the rest of the question.
That's the way it should be.
So three questions. You get a point if you get it right. There's no points taken away from you if you get a question wrong because we encourage participation on the Weird News Challenge.
Yeah.
If there's a tie at the end, there will be a tiebreaker question to ensure that we have a victor. Skip Weber is playing. Gabe Pfeiffer is playing. Producer Zach Factor is playing. Zach, you're excitement is barely contained.
Yeah.
I can't even. Are you going to be able to play?
Oh yeah, my heart rate's pretty high right now.
All right,
now.
There.
You guys can't see, right. but he's jumping.
First thing we have to do is test the buzzer. Zach, buzzer test.
Beep beep beep
beep beep beep.
Ding 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 ding.
Skip's got the ding dings.
Whoop whoop.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Gabe's like got the whoop whoops.
That's the sound of the police.
That's the sound of the police. All right. So here we go. Weekend Report. Weird News Challenge episode number 17. Question number one. No, Katie Fitzpatrick rule. A new survey asked kids to name the superpower they'd most like to have. What?
Whoop whoop.
Superpower.
Flight?
That is correct.
Oh,
I almost did that.
No. That's all right.
Gabe Pfeiffer on the board. The rest of the question was, what superpower finished first?
Yeah, I almost did. I almost said that. That's good. As soon as you guess it, I said, oh, that's it.
Flying won the survey by getting 27% of the vote, which was by far the most, and duh.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to fly. Flying.
Right, right. Exactly.
Invisibility was number two.
I was thinking about that. That's the other one.
I'm thinking about those exact same two things.
See, I'm going flight and then strength.
You're going full on Superman. You're invisible.
You can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. That's a good point. But you got to be naked. Yeah. That's a little weird.
Well, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And what happens when you eat?
Well,
does the food.
Now, technically.
Can you see the food?
Technically, you can't actually see because the light can't actually get to your eyes.
Yeah.
It's diffracting.
Right, that's good.
Anyway, that's my scientist coming out. Sorry. I'm ruining everybody's fun.
Gabe Pfeiffer off to a quick 1-0 lead. Here we go. Question number two of the Weird News Challenge. A student at Ladue High School made national news this week when his stepdad, who is also his lawyer, sued the school.
Woo woo.
Ding ding.
Go ahead.
A spot on the soccer team?
JV soccer team.
Be a little more specific, Gabe.
He was suing for his son being denied a spot on the JV soccer team. Yeah.
It's the varsity soccer team, but it's the soccer team.
Well,
I'm giving you that.
Thank you.
The question was, why did this student at Ladue sue the school? And it's because he didn't make the soccer team.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Well,
national
actually,
news.
I think that he got it right, though.
He said soccer
more
team.
More specific. No, no, because they weren't mad. From what I understand, they weren't mad that he didn't make the soccer team. They were mad because of his age.
Yeah.
He could not then play JV.
He didn't make the varsity team,
so, and
they said that he should be allowed
to play the JV.
And he wasn't allowed to play JV. They were not saying that.
That's exactly right.
All right, Gabe won it.
Gabe won the Weird News Challenge. We're going to ask the other questions. But he just...
Yeah,
man.
I want to say
I'm glad to lose by the Katie Bailey rule
because you did. You lost.
I know, and I almost buzzed in both times early. No, I knew what both those were.
I'm gonna stick up for you right now. Your brain is used to having to hear the question.
No. That's not true.
Gabe has never had those restrictions put on him before.
I think Gabe's. Look, that question here, if I had been Gabe, I would have been even earlier on it because you knew the story.
Yeah.
You knew the story. But you were already up 1-0. You had nothing to lose.
Right.
So if I had been you, as soon as you said a student, I would have gone bing, bing, bing right there.
I almost did.
But I said, man, I can't afford to lose this one.
What were you going to say? Yeah.
I was just going to say that it seems like the people that have come in just for these one-time deals.
That's true.
Just go whole hog.
Yeah. The week you weren't here, the Trish Gazelle filled in for you.
Right.
She won. Annie Fry, the one and only time she played, she won.
That's all right, yeah.
All right. Here we go.
But Skip's a good sportsman because he brought up the rule.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Live by the rule, die by the rule.
I would much rather die by the rule than the other
ways
that I've been screwed out of victory.
Listen, kids, that's how you lose with
the rules. All right, let's finish the questions. Exactly. Let's finish the questions just because the people insist that we do.
Yeah.
Question number three. General Mills announced this week that they are making a change to their Trix cereal. The change is actually a throwback to the way Trix was in the 90s and early 2000s. What changes are being made to Trix cereal?
They're going back to the fruit shapes of the cereal.
That is exactly right.
Wow.
They are no longer going to be the colored stupid little balls. Yeah. Right. They're going to go back to the.
Does anybody even eat Trix cereal anymore?
I don't like Trix. I never did. I don't either.
I guess I don't watch, with my kids being older, I don't watch enough kids' programming.
That's true. We don't see cereal commercials.
I don't see any cereal commercials. I still see some cereal commercials on regular programming.
Yeah, like Special K.
Yeah.
But not adult cereal, the ones with Brandon.
I think I've seen Frosted Flakes and Lucky Charms in at least the last measurable amount of time. It's been years and years since I've seen Trix commercials.
Yeah.
They got the Tricks Are for Kids rabbit thing.
Oh, yeah. That's all I remember.
All right. The tiebreaker question, had we needed it, would have been this. No need to buzz in. Everybody gets a chance to guess. A new survey asked men how much time they spend hiding in the bathroom. In other words, they may go in there for a real reason, like to use the restroom or take a shower or something, but they just stay in there because they're avoiding something. They don't want to go out and deal with the family or whatever.
Life.
So, according to this survey, how many hours in a year do men
in a year?
Hours in a year do men hide in the bathroom?
It's got to be a ton.
Everyone want to take a guess? Go ahead. You already won, so go ahead.
Oh, gosh.
Make your guess first.
100 hours. I don't know. It's a year.
Zach?
Oh, boy. Yeah, a year? I don't know. I'd say I'll go with 60 hours.
Okay.
That was going to be what I said after his 100.
Right.
My initial thing was going to be 50.
Right? Yeah, okay.
So I will go with 59 hours.
Which would make you the winner.
Oh, yes. Either Price is Right rule wins you get out of there.
It's only 7.
Wow.
It's only 7 hours?
7 hours a year, according to this survey.
I guess when I do that.
No, men lie.
When I do that, it's
I was going to say, I think men are lying. Yeah,
when I do that, it's not so much to avoid it. That's where I do a lot of reading, so I'll sit there.
Sure.
And next thing you know, instead of a 3-minute trip to the bathroom,
yeah,
it'll be like
it's a 10-minute
40-minute trip because I don't want to fit. I started a new chapter. I don't want to
hey,
make you know.
Yeah,
whatever.
You're sitting there with your phone now. Exactly. I mean, it's got
to
be.
Three kids running around out there. Yeah. I know what it's like to milk a little more peace and quiet out of the bathroom trip. All right, we got to take a break. Don't go anywhere. Skip Weber's going to stick around, and we got more Weekend Report coming your way next. It is FM News Talk 97.1. Welcome into hour number two of the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Excuse me, Tony Colombo here with Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a.
Oh, yeah.
St. John the Philosopher. St. John the Philosopher YouTube show. Go check it out. Gabe is in for Chris Arps this week, sitting in for the entire show. Chris out dealing with some family issues. Will be back with us next week. Boy, did he miss a week. Crazy week to not be here. But
aren't they
back
all?
Yeah, right. That's a good point. Chris will be back next week. We're so happy to have Gabe in studio with us for this entire show. Just wrapped up a great hour of interviews. Go back to 971talk.com. Click on podcast. You'll see all of the fine programs here on the radio station. And click on the Weekend Report podcast right there on the page, and you can download all the interviews. We talked to Sandra McDowell, who is running for Missouri State Auditor. We talked to Pastor John Michael Brown, and you can go back and listen to those interviews again, or you can catch them if you missed them. Absolutely free. Listen to the whole show, parts of the show. You can listen to them right there on the website, or you can download them. For free, like I said, take them with you and listen to the Weekend Report throughout the week. So please go and do that. Also, while you're on the website, check out 971talk.com/weekendreport. See our YouTube video player and learn more about the show there. What we normally do in these part of the show as we start hour number two is what we call the Week in Review Part 2. We started the show talking about Gabe promoting your, the YouTube channel, but also kind of got off into a tangent, my fault, about just the state of the world, basically, the state of politics and these two parties are, particularly how crazy the left has gone. Right now, I want to get into some of the specifics, some of the details of what we saw in this past week, starting with the FBI investigation. So last week, the week ended with, and we talked on this show about how Jeff Flake had ended the Senate Judiciary hearing by saying that he was not going to vote yes on Brett Kavanaugh to go to the Supreme Court unless Republicans went along with the idea of an FBI investigation that the Democrats had been harping on and begging for and insisting on all throughout that confirmation hearing process. The Republicans finally gave in to that. the Republicans and the White House issued a one-week FBI investigation. The president did not limit that investigation, as was the original request by Jeff Flake, to limit it in scope to only look into the Christine Blasey Ford allegations. The president told the FBI, you go and you talk to anybody you think you need to talk to about any of these allegations against him, and anybody that you deem pertinent to his nomination, you go talk to. The FBI did that. They released the report. The senators all read it. And I don't think it changed one
Not a dang thing.
So my question for you, Gabe, is was this investigation, was this week that we basically held off on a vote and allowed the FBI to do this investigation, was this week productive to the process of putting somebody on the Supreme Court?
Now, as a partisan, I just say no. But but as somebody who is interested in truth and everything like that, I think there is a positive side to it. So it's kind of a yes and no. You know, when these allegations came to light, everybody said, well, we want to hear her side. We want to give her a chance to make her case. Everybody said that. The Republicans on the judiciary said, come and talk to us. Yeah. It was almost immediate. It was like within hours, basically, of them learning of all this. But then that's when things got contentious, because it was now her lawyer is giving you the runaround. Oh, I don't like to fly. Well, maybe I could fly. I don't know. You guys could come out.
I don't like to fly, even though I travel all over the world.
So, you know, and just run around here. And all it did was give more time for the Democrat partisans and their propaganda arm in the media to continue to spin up this narrative. And I think that's actually what happened with the FBI report. It added basically another week of that same thing going on. So that's no part. That's where it's not productive at all. But it is productive in that it simply adds a bit of officialness, if I can make up a word, to the conclusion we had all drawn from what we'd heard it before.
Yeah. It puts the Democrats, in my opinion, in an even worse position than they were ahead. It was like, be careful what you ask for.
Oh yeah,
because they got what they wanted, and it basically just showed what we had already all said and what all previous FBI investigations had showed, is that there was no cooperation to any of these allegations, and there's no reason to believe that Brett Kavanaugh has led anything but a straight as an arrow life. He likes beer. He made that clear. He likes beer.
I like beer.
But that's not a crime.
Right.
And, you know, he said, I liked beer then, and I still like beer. So that, okay, you got him on that one.
You got him.
But I don't think we're anywhere. I don't think the Democrats made any ground except for giving more time.
Mm-hmm.
For people to make allegations and give themselves more time to get out in the public eye and continue to disparage Brett Kavanaugh.
Definitely, yeah.
But they gained nothing as far as credibility for any of their arguments are concerned. Do you think that where we're at now in the world of politics is just the way it's going to be? Or do you think we will come back to a level of decorum at some point? Or is this just where we're at now?
Really, I kind of think, and this is kind of sad, but I kind of think this is the new normal, which is, at least for now.
I think you're right. I hate to say that, but I think you're right.
Because I think Trump kind of changed everything. Like I said before, he showed that, you know, they weren't playing by, you know, the Marquis of Queensberry rules. You know, they actually had those brass knuckles underneath their gloves. So when he came in bare-fisted, you know, they say, okay, gloves are coming off. It's like, well, now we see that you cheat the entire time. So at some point, though, I think there is going to come a tipping point, though, because the middle, who's disgusted by what they're seeing right now, I think, are going to force the Democrats either to change or to become irrelevant. I mean, they could be that, you know, the party in history that we learn about from the early 1700s, that the Whig Party or something like that, that just it eventually just had to die and something had to take its place. So that may happen, but I don't know.
So I have been on a soapbox in the last couple weeks about Keith Ellison and how that just the whole Keith Ellison situation. Yeah, it puts a spotlight on the hypocrisy of the left, that you have this Democratic congressman who is running for I think Secretary of State in Minnesota, his own state, Minnesota.
Yeah, something like that.
AG or Secretary of State in Minnesota.
Yep.
Won that primary there. And so here we have a sitting United States Democratic congressman who also happens to be a black Muslim who has an allegation against him from a former girlfriend. And the evidence... she has presented.
There's a stack of it.
Yes, the evidence that she has presented to abuse from Keith Ellison is a lot more than anything we've seen presented against Brett Kavanaugh.
There are people who've corroborated
and here's,
it, too.
There's corroboration. There's a lot of detail that she has presented, not just stories, but actual documents, text messages, and medical reports.
A picture of her face. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So, and here's the party of the left saying, here's the Democrats saying, every woman needs to be believed. Every woman needs to be heard, except for a woman who has said something about a Democrat.
Yes.
So I've been on this Keith Ellison bandwagon just screaming at the top of my lungs for everybody to please realize the hypocrisy of the left and look at what they're doing to this woman that is also liberal. This woman who was with Keith Ellison is a very active Democrat.
Oh yeah.
And
it doesn't
she's
matter.
On Twitter saying, "Where's my party? My party has turned their back on me." The party that says that they want to hear all women, you know, the allegations, and all women are to be believed. They're not only are they turning their back on it, but they're disparaging her.
Oh yeah,
they're discrediting her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
So I've got a new. I'm gonna stay on the soapbox, but I'm gonna add another name to my Keith Ellison soapbox, and that is Senator Richard Blumenthal. Sits on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Oh, wait, did I?
This is the falsest in uno, falsest in omnibus.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I'm talking about? So Richard Blumenthal is a Democrat. He's been very prominent. He's on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's been one of these guys leading the charge against Brett Kavanaugh, and he made this big point during the hearings with Brett Kavanaugh. He was really harping on trying to get Brett Kavanaugh to admit to his drinking and to admit that he had, you know, nights that he had drank to the point of either blacking out or forgetting what was going on. And he was really pushing, you know, just trying to prove that Brett Kavanaugh has a drinking problem.
Right.
And his whole point was, and he said these exact words, as his whole point was to Brett Kavanaugh, "You know what the legal term falsus in uno, falsus in omnibus means, right?" And
right.
Brett Kavanaugh says, "I do know what that means, but you can go ahead and explain it if you want." And it's a Latin term that basically says, if you're lying about one thing, you'll lie about everything.
Yes.
So his point that he was trying to make was, if I can prove that you're lying about drinking, about your drinking habits, then that proves that you're lying about everything. All I have to do is prove that you're lying about something, and that makes you a liar about everything.
Right.
Richard Blumenthal,
say it,
has a history of telling people and telling campaign rallies that he served in Vietnam when he, in fact, did not serve in Vietnam.
Right.
And we've had callers to this radio station, veterans, that is the ultimate sin.
Oh, yeah.
That's to veterans.
Stolen valor is a thing.
Stolen valor is a real thing, and it should be.
Yes.
And he, when he was running for Senate and running in other campaigns, he would go up on stage and talk about how when, you know, people would bring up the treatment of Vietnam soldiers when they came back from Vietnam, and he would say things like, "When I came back, and the things that we went through when we came back," and then he would talk about, you know, serving his country in Vietnam, when in fact he never did.
Right.
He applied for and got all these deferments, mm-hmm. and then he finally did serve in the military, mm-hmm. but was never sent overseas and never sent over to Vietnam.
Right.
But continued to pretend that he was, in order for you, like you just said, steal valor.
That's right.
Get that credibility and use that as a way to get himself elected and get himself more credibility. So,
and then this guy is using the
standard, and now he's up there using falsus and uno falsus. He's up there trying to prove, hey, if I can prove that you're lying about one thing, that means you lie about everything. Well, Mr. Blumenthal, you are a liar in one thing for sure.
It's the flip test.
Doesn't that mean that you're a? It's not flip. Doesn't that mean you're a liar in everything?
Yeah.
And this is one of the guys that's leading the charge against Brett Kavanaugh.
What really gets me is the hubris that a lot of these guys use in the middle of it, and I'm not exactly sure what it is. Like I could never be so bold as to knowingly be the big chatterbox on this thing if I know that there's something, you know, there's a gigantic a pile of skeletons in my closet. Like I would keep my head down, but I guess I'm a little too logical for this.
Yeah. One thing that I wanted to also point out was the treatment that Brett Kavanaugh and his family has received, mm-hmm. Has been over the top. I don't know if you saw this cartoonist. Left-wing editorial cartoonist. His name is Chris Britt. He is very often published by a publication called the Illinois Times. This did not appear in the Illinois Times, although it did have the Illinois Times logo in the cartoon. Mm-hmm. But he only published this on his Facebook page. But this man put out a cartoon this week, and it was depicting one of Brett Kavanaugh's daughters, his 10-year-old daughter, whose name is Liza, who Brett Kavanaugh talked about in his testimony about how 10-year-old Liza had told Kavanaugh and his wife, we need to pray for the woman.
Yeah.
About talking about Christine Blasey Ford, you know, as our families, this is a 10-year-old saying, as our family's going through everything we're going through, we need to not forget about what she's going through too, and we need to include her in our prayers. And it almost brought him to tears. It almost brought me to tears.
Seriously.
Just talking about it. But here's this scumbag, this dirtbag political editorial cartoonist who creates this cartoon that depicts Liza Kavanaugh, 10-year-old Liza Kavanaugh, on her knees, praying on her bed, presumably before going to bed at night, and it says, in Liza's words, "Dear God, forgive my angry, lying, alcoholic father for sexually assaulting Dr. Ford."
Yeah, I saw that. And that, oh man, my blood was boiling on that. I couldn't imagine somebody coming after me through my child. Oh my gosh.
It's one of the reasons
why I could never be in politics, because I'll show up at your house, you do something that to me.
So,
you know.
Look, I believe that Christine Blasey Ford went through something. And I believe that there's something inside of her that is haunting her, mm-hmm. and I hope that she gets that resolved. And I know that there are many people out there that, you know, that have gone through terrible things, sexual assault and other things, that either have been resolved and justice has been served or maybe it hasn't. But that doesn't mean that people like Brett Kavanaugh aren't going through horrible. This kind of – could you imagine opening up the – internet and seeing something like that?
Or
your children being exposed to something like that?
Or being accosted at school.
So if they're just trying to make this man suffer, then they are successful at least in that.
It's disgusting,
and I hope it ends soon and we can all move on. But like you said a little bit ago, unfortunately, I think this is the norm.
Yeah.
We're going to lighten things up a little bit.
Yes,
all right,
please.
We're going to take a break.
Yes.
And when we get back, our good buddy Skip Weber is going to be in studio with us. And we have another edition of the Weird News Challenge, America's favorite game show, is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It is the Weekend Report on FM News Talk 97.1. Chris Harps would call this one the Quiet Storm. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here. Gabe Pfeiffer, St. John the Philosopher, is in for Chris Arps this week. Chris will be back next week. Zach Factor, producer of The Stars, is here. And Skip Weber is still joining us here as well. Everybody coming down from another exciting edition of the Weird News Challenge. Gabe Pfeiffer is now officially on the scoreboard.
Right.
He's in the books. You're in the record books.
That should show you that going forward, we don't need Katie Fitzpatrick.
I will consider it. Yeah. I'll consider it.
If I'm the one that's the biggest advocate, and it caused me to lose.
It did cause you to lose.
I'm still happy about it not being there. That should tell you something about it.
That's a great point. That's a great point. If you missed the Weird News Challenge or any of our great interviews earlier in the show, you can always go to 971talk.com. Click on podcasts. You'll see all the great shows here on 971 on the podcast page. Click on the Weekend Report, and you can listen to our shows right there on the website, or you can download them absolutely for free. Take the podcast with you and make sure that you don't miss anything. Go back and listen to the Weird News Challenge. Skip wanted to talk about it's a new month. What's happening at Weber Chevrolet?
You know what's funny is that this is I would say spring and fall are my two favorite selling seasons. I love the summer. Personally, for all other things, and the winter's cool. It's got the best holiday in it. It's got you know the cold weather can be cool, fire building and all that. But as far as showing up to work and selling, the spring and the summer, the spring and the fall seem to be the times where it's the most fun for a lot. But in the fall, for a lot of reasons, you know, we have a bunch of vehicles that we are selling 19s on now. Mm-hmm. A couple of them were only selling 19s when we were literally virtually with just two or three units other than, you know, no 18s at all.
Right, right.
Okay? So so there's 19s out there, and to see those start to have some incentives on there, so now people, you know, I'm looking at, hey, the daily count, hey, we sold a few 19s today. That's kind of cool. But the deals from Detroit on the 18s, you know, I've had customers say, why would anybody buy any time but the fall? I said, well, even though, because the rebates are the biggest, you take what I have left, you know, that's what you get. Mm-hmm. For example, last month when we were selling the last of our 18 Equinoxes, people didn't really want a lot of the stuff we had, but they took it for the deal. But that's why now the 19 Equinoxes having incentives on them is awesome.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I say this about our Silverados. You know full well as a truck guy that we have a new 2019 truck.
Yeah.
Everything is new on it.
Yes.
Every bit of it.
Yes.
They look amazing.
The double cabs have been
out for a while.
Right.
The crew cabs are finally out now, too. We have them. There's not much incentive on them. We sell a few of them. There's not much incentive. However, Chevrolet, because they have all these parts that they had bought and left over, they have a ton of capacity left to build the old style 2018 crew cab. Mm-hmm. We're still receiving those.
Oh, wow.
So this late in the thing, even though we have the 19s out, we're still receiving 18 crew cabs. Because of that, our selection is still gigantic.
Yeah.
And the incentives from Detroit on them are as if we're selling them down, which we are.
Wow.
So now you don't have to sit there and say, here's the huge discount.
Yeah.
But I have to rely on what's left. I've got as much as I ever do right now.
That's
amazing. Of crew cabs, and I'm taking $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 off my crew cabs.
And I know gigantic.
I mean, never say that number. $14,000, $15,000
off. That's another car.
That's exactly. Amazing.
That's what we're taking because the deals are big. Jeez. And you know our deals on top of what Detroit does are huge. So, I mean, I don't want to say it's on every vehicle. That's dishonest. But it's at least 11.
Yeah.
11 or 12,000. Up to 15,000 on crew cabs, yeah.
Well, I can tell you, and I maintain that you do this for evil purposes. The couple times that I've had to rent a car from Weber Chevrolet,
I somehow always end up in a 2018
you don't rent Silverado.
It. You don't rent it.
You're right.
We just let our customers drive it. It is no charge.
I talked about the service department earlier in the show. Yeah, that is one of the most amazing, to me, points of the service department at Weber Chevrolet. My wife just had her vehicle in the shop earlier this week. I know Dave Glover had his in also. To be able to just go there and you go in there and you see this crazy, it's like a city. It's like there's so much activity and you're like, it's so busy in here. I'm going to be here forever. But no, you drop your car off, you get a new car, and you just go, and they take care of your car, and then you come back and pick it up when it's ready. It's so convenient. It's so amazing. But the several times that I've had to do that this year, I've always found myself in a 2018 Silverado. I think Skip is sending a message. But those trucks, those 18s, what I'm getting at is the truck, those 18 Silverados are amazing vehicles.
Right.
Amazing vehicles. Absolutely.
Now, and I'd like to say that we are clever enough to sit there and say, well, Tony might want to be in the bus. But the truth of the matter is, you're getting the truck
like
because you're driving
a truck.
You're getting the truck because you're driving a truck.
Right. No, that's
most
really cool.
People kind of.
That's so cool.
If you're going. Now, we can't do that constantly. I mean, we have all these truck buyers. We have a few trucks in our fleet. But if it's available, a person who has a truck and needs to not be able to wait will try to put them in a truck.
Right.
Someone who has got, you know, four kids and is driving a Traverse, we got you. We'll do our very best to have you in a Traverse, not a Cruise or a Malibu or, you know, so that kind of stuff. So.
As a truck driver, it seems like this is the absolute perfect time then to go up there and take a look.
It really
is. Do I want to spend a little bit more and get the brand new 19s with the new body style and the new truck, or do I want to take advantage of these amazing deals and get in basically
not
a brand new 2018 Silverado.
Not to try to hurt
the options
anything
are there.
With the brand new, but I would take the 18 because the 19s are going to be, that style is going to be around a long time.
Right.
You could have, if you trade every 3 years or every 4 years or whatever you might do, if you're longer, then you may make that decision. But if you're a 3 or 4 year guy.
Yeah. For some people,
it's
important.
Get the 18 now. The
for some people, they always want to be first.
Yeah,
they want to have the new stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So go do that right now.
Now
you can
the other thing
19s,
about that is,
or you can take,
What we do that not a lot of people know about is we do lease vehicles.
Yeah.
And with the leasing, those 19s, because they're brand new 19s, the fall is the best time to lease the new model.
Right.
Because that's when they're predicted to be worth the most.
Gotcha.
So that's, you know, the ones that we're selling are typically going out on leases. So that's another thing to look at.
Before we lose you, coming up just a few minutes from now at 7:30, the best music show on a talk station in the United States of America.
In the history.
In the history of the United States.
Yep.
Maybe internationally. Maybe worldwide. The best music show on a talk station in the world. Close Encounters with Mark Close and Skip Weber. What's on today's show?
So today we're doing songs with cities in their title.
Oh, okay. I like this.
Oh, man. Wait till you hear what I brought in. You know, as usual, I only get to, I only get to pick one song.
Right.
That's just close. I mean,
yeah,
he
takes advantage of the.
But I like all. I mean, once in a while, maybe even once a week, he pulls out something I've never heard. But other than that, I really like the stuff he pulls. But my city, I'm not going LA, I'm not going Chicago, Boston. Believe it or not, my city that's being sung about in my song, Wentzville, Missouri.
Ooh.
Really?
All right.
I think I don't know. I don't know if Close knows the song.
Nice.
I don't know if Close knows the song, but I'm going to pop it on him. And whether he does or not, that's my song. It's a pretty cool song. It's not my favorite song by this artist.
Right.
By any means. But when I first got that CD back in the 80s, I looked it up. I could not find a Wentzville anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
So I said, yesterday when Close told me that, or 2 days ago, and I used the magic of Google to research again.
Yeah.
And still could not find any. My knowledge, there's one Wentzville in the country. So when there's a song that talks about going back to Wentzville, that's got to be right here in St. Louis.
Man. I love it. I love it. Close Encounters starts at 7:30. Skip Weber, thank you so much for joining us again, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
And now, before we end today's show, we are joined on the phone by our friend Tiffany Cervant from the Cervant Realty Group, one of the great sponsors of the Weekend Report. Tiffany, so good to talk with you. Thanks for taking a minute for us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate it. You know, I love talking about real estate.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
And the reason I wanted to have you on here, we did just talk to you sort of recently, but I wanted to get you back on today. Because something that we talked about the last time you were on really stuck with me, and it was that you were talking about we are in a seller's market so intense that it's about the bestsellers market or up there with the bestsellers markets that you have ever seen in your 31 years of doing this. I wanted to ask you if we're still in that situation, if it's still that great sellers market, and if it is, just kind of make that point that if you're even thinking about selling your home and you don't have that thing on the market right now, you're probably doing yourself a disservice. So where are we at in the seller's market, and what can you do for people right now?
Well, I have to agree with you 100%, Tony. It is still a seller's market, and we are still in somewhat of a housing shortage. And, you know, that is great if you want to sell. It's the perfect time to be on market. And I, right before we got on this call, I pulled the stats. The median days on market is 10 days on market. But, yeah, and so the way we do it at the Servant Group is we have a grand opening. So we talk about your house for 2 weeks. Coming soon, we build anticipation. And on the day that we do the open house or grand opening, that's when we get into this multiple offer situation where we've built the anticipation and we're getting everybody in looking at the house at the same time. And then we get the contracts. That's when you get into the maybe possibly over asking price because we have multiple offers coming in. So this is a good time. And I know we have some industries moving into the area, so I don't see that it's going to slow up. We might, you know, through the holidays, I got to be honest, we'll slow up just a tad bit because not everybody wants to move during the holidays, but we're not feeling that yet. So I think it's still an excellent time, and I don't think that we'll feel much of a slow up through the holidays this year.
Yeah, well, and even if it is going to slow up a little bit, all the more reason to take advantage of this seller's market right now and get your property out there. And I know that you specifically and everyone out there at the Servant Realty Group sort of pride yourself in getting offers on the houses that you're selling at or even above asking price. And if you're already good at that, which you are with the market that we're in right now, you really have an opportunity to get really what you want for your house if you're selling it. So you need to get it on the market ASAP.
That's exactly the truth. And we're at a historical high on our home values for our area, St. Louis, St. Charles County area. We're at the top of the spectrum of what houses are worth. And this is the time to get the most out of your home. Because we don't know what the economy is going to do. I think the economy is going to keep growing and be great. But right now, it is an excellent time. And so why not take advantage of it while we know it's excellent? Because we don't know what's going to happen next year. But right now, we know it's great. So it is still moving. It is absolutely still moving. We haven't felt much of a slow up for the holiday anticipation. So I'm ready when they are.
Something I tell everybody every week, one of my favorite things about you is how you put your number out there. You want people to call you. You have the website. Of course, people can go and check that out. But you want to talk to people and even text with people, which I just think is amazing that you can get this process started with Tiffany and the folks there at the Servant Realty Group by just sending Tiffany a text. And I think that's, you know, for somebody like me that doesn't like to spend time on the internet and doesn't like to make phone calls, the fact that I could just send a text to get this thing started, it just makes it so convenient. So tell folks, if you want to give the website, go ahead, but definitely give that telephone number so they can give you a call or give you a text if they do want to get that house on the market right now.
Yeah, great. Yes, we love getting text. We get a text. We got a text at 11:30 on a Saturday night at the Lake of the Ozarks and wrote a contract the next morning.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's people are sitting there. So I appreciate you mentioning that, Tony. Yes, you can reach us at 636-697-4495, 636-697-4495. Just start there, and from there I will send you our app that will lead them to our website. So that's the best way. And, you know, I'm like you, Tony. We're busy. Who's got time to hang on the phone? So when somebody is sitting there on their couch, a text is great. And then if they want to have a conversation, I'm there for that conversation. Don't you think people kind of like that better?
Oh, I know I do, and I appreciate that so much. Tiffany Servant from the Servant Realty Group, thanks so much for everything you do for this show, and we will talk to you again really soon.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate
you
it,
bet.
Okay?
You
have
bet.
A great call.
Yeah, you too. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
636-697-4495. Call Tiffany. Get that process started, especially if you have property to sell, because right now you can take advantage of that great seller's market. That is going to do it for another edition of the Weekend Report. Want to say a big thank you to Gabe Pfeiffer, a.k.a. St. John the Philosopher. Go check out the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show to hear more from Gabe. Chris Arps will be back with us next week. For Gabe and for Zach Factor, I am Tony Colombo. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of the Weekend Report. We will see you guys next Saturday back here at 5 p.m. on FM News Talk 97.1. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. You have to wait for the meow. Hold on. Here it comes. Here it comes. Yeah. See, you can't talk until the meow happens. Call this the wah-wah song. Wah-wah-wah. All right. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. It's FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here. Producer Zach Factor in the studio, as always. And our friend Gabe Pfeiffer. St. John the Philosopher, the St. John the Philosopher YouTube show is joining us as well. Chris Arps is out this week. He will be back next week. And Gabe is joining us for the entire 2 hours of the Weekend Report today. So thanks again, my friend.
Oh, thanks for having me.
For being here. And now joining us on the phone, as I mentioned in the last segment, which was the interview with Sandra McDowell, which you should go back and podcast because it was really good. Mm-hmm. Another great guest joining us on the phone, our friend Pastor John Michael Brown, JMB. Great to talk with you. How are you?
Yeah.
I'm great, brother, except your Cowboys beat my Lions.
You know what?
They had no offense until they play us.
I know, right?
They're great.
Hey, listen, I'm glad to see the Cowboys get a win, but I am not a believer this year. I feel like the window has closed, and we are in a little bit of a rebuilding process, and with no Witten and no Dez Bryant, all of the offense seems to be on the shoulders of Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott.
He's the one to beat us, man.
I know, but
40-yard pass he caught at the end of the game.
He's got to have help. He's got to get help. We'll see. But I think it's going to be a couple years before the Cowboys are ready to compete again. But we'll see. We'll see about that. So anybody who is not familiar with John Michael Brown, Pastor Brown has been on this show many times, has been on the Dave Glover show many times throughout the years here on the radio station. And I like to talk to John Michael because of his unique perspective of being a pastor in North County at the church that both Gabe and I attend, and working specifically with the youth up there in North County. You get to you get a firsthand account, I think, of what particular people and a certain segment of the community and our society are feeling about some of the news stories that we talk about here every day. And, you know, we talk about them from our perspective, which is, you know, the media, who are all overwhelmed by news coverage and news stories every day. But that is not, and we say this all the time, we realize this, that is not the exposure that the normal person has to the news. We are hyper engaged.
Yeah.
And the average person is not. So it's interesting to see sometimes when we think a news story is huge and impactful, I don't think we're always right that it's having the same impact on everyday people who are just getting up, going to work and doing their thing and don't really watch the news very much. So I like to I like to talk to Pastor Brown about, you know, his perspective of the impact that some of these stories are having on regular folks out there. And the one thing I wanted to at least start with, being somebody who works a lot with the youth up there at the church in North County, and I know that you have put together a lot of intramural sports, you know, tournaments and time in the gym there at the church and with a lot of the kids up there. we have talked a lot in the last couple of years about NFL protests, Colin Kaepernick, the whole Nike thing. And, you know, people are disgusted with football and they don't want to watch sports anymore and get it out of my. I wanted to get your thoughts on how much of the impact have you seen on, you know, the youth of America and your community when it comes to that story and the impact that it has had or maybe not had on people. Do you feel that permeating into regular people's living rooms on Sunday afternoons when they would normally be sitting down to watch a football game?
I don't think it's happened on a mass effect. I mean, I think, you know, you talk about sports, you see sometimes the stuff funneling down, we're making demonstrations during the national anthem or whatnot. You know, to me, you probably know me well enough to think it's just bogus because I think back of when Kaepernick first started this and then Kaepernick can't find a job and all these people demonstrating during the national anthem. Hey, if you want to demonstrate, Colin Kaepernick's not getting paid. Why don't you refuse to play until he gets a job? Everybody does these. They want to make this stupid sacrifice where, oh, I'm sacrificing because people yelled at me and screamed at me and they didn't buy my jersey this month. No, you're not sacrificing. You're still allowing the NFL to pay you millions of dollars. You're making money off of this engine that you think is racist. They're discriminating against black people or they're keeping us from, you know, at any of my jobs that I've ever had, I can't just protest whatever I want, whenever I want. When you're
on the clock,
the NFL, you know, you're on the clock. So I see the effects. You know, sometimes players might want to make a demonstration, but I think the normal teenager, they still want to go to the league. You know, so it besides a passing fad of, oh, we're not gonna stand for this racist national anthem or whatever. It's a passing fad for most of them. I don't think that many of them really pay attention to the issue. It was like when it was popular to do, everybody said something, but now it's kind of, they've moved on. They're back to Instagram and social media and doing the same old worthless stuff that led them into positions to not succeed that they blame on racism. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if you put your phone down at the workplace or in school or wherever, maybe you can get the knowledge and the training you need to succeed and you wouldn't have to blame it on racism anymore. So I think that you have that from the average Joe, but there are more involved people, I think, that pay attention to politics and I have in the past year or so, actually, on both ends. So when Kaepernick didn't have a job, I heard people say, well, I'm not watching the NFL. I'm boycotting the NFL. And I mean, I would say, well, actually not almost, but exclusively the ethnicity of the people that were boycotting the NFL were African American. Hmm. Now on the flip side, we have people who are, you know, that are disgusted with the NFL and the continued protests and players are being allowed. And the only people that I could think of that are currently saying I'm not watching the NFL are not African American. Mm-hmm. They're Caucasian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think about these issues and I go, man, these issues reflect a social divide. I mean, I don't know if they cause it, but it makes it so much more obvious.
I'm glad you bring that up because I wanted to ask you that exact question. It hurts my heart, and it bothers me deeply that we have all of these things on television, in the media, whether it be, you know, the politics of the day or this NFL protest thing. It always gets made into a racial thing. It always comes. There's this. The race card is being played like crazy. And I feel like there are forces out there that are trying to increase the racial divide, not heal the racial divide. And I almost am afraid that things are getting worse, that we were better off 20 years ago in the 90s when I was in high school. I didn't feel the racial tension that I feel now. And it's ridiculous that we may be going backwards. Am I just oversensitive of that because of, like I said earlier, being so engaged in the media and watching television, or do you feel like that's happening in real life? Is what is happening on our televisions permeating into our real life and starting to create racial tension where it shouldn't be?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think by and large, you think 20 to 25 years ago, we were all in high school people are still hanging out with the people that they hang out with. I just think you have more of the conflicts that explode. And I think people maybe look at more justifiable reasons. If an individual doesn't like another ethnicity, and that, you know, we'll take the protests. Now, by and large, the persons that are protest in the NFL that do a demonstration during the national anthem or whatnot are persons of color. So an individual that has a disposition that's negative towards minorities, now they have another reason that can mask their racial disposition, because at the end of the day, if you disrespect something that someone else holds dear, like the national anthem or our flag, they can do almost whatever they want in retaliation to that, because now I don't know if they're doing it because you disrespected the flag or because you're black, because you disrespected the flag.
Right.
So now, like, I think what will happen is, like, people who do have racial biases put their racial bias hides behind something that I think more people would think is legitimate, is having a dislike for people that disrespect the flag or people who don't honor the military or people who, you know, just don't respect and have general manners and be respectful of others in society. So now you have, you know, an opportunity for the real prejudices to be lost in these other issues. And so now you can't even tell. So it becomes more dangerous, because now you don't know who really dislikes persons of color or people who just dislike demonstrations against, you know, protest.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's like it's more secret. I mean, I remember my father used to always say, you know, he'd much rather know a person is racist.
Yeah.
Than you want to know you're dealing with the KKK.
Right.
I know how to deal with the KKK.
Right.
But if I don't know that you're secretly into KKK, now I think you're my friend. But, you know, you think of some of those. The Othello is that where your best friend is actually your greatest enemy. You know, the Shakespeare.
Pastor John Michael Brown, unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes and joining us this afternoon. I don't know, do you have any social media or anything out there that you want to promote, have people follow you on, or just stay tuned for the next time you're on the radio? Do you?
It's more stay tuned. I don't get on social media that much because people irritate me.
Yeah. So I understand.
Hey, but
I understand.
I'm going to have to have you on my YouTube channel again. We get the three wise guys again together again.
Three
we could do one.
That's right.
We could do that again.
Go check out me and John Michael on Gabe's YouTube show, St. John the Philosopher on YouTube, if you want to hear more from John Michael and see that beautiful face of his.
Yes.
thank you so much, Pastor Brown. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Got a whole nother hour of the Week in Report coming up. Don't go anywhere. It is the Week in Report on FM News Talk 97.1.